than all the Democrats in Congress combined. It's Bart Cop Radio.
The diddle monkeys that write in, they like to call me a racist because, well, I don't like Tiger Woods. And there's someone else. Who else don't I like? Don't like Clarence Thomas. Somebody else, I'm missing a big one. But the last time I think they called me that is when I used the term the Memphis niggers. And I was describing what would people feel like if they put an NFL team in Memphis and called it the Memphis niggers. Now, I think... Well, that, hey, it wouldn't happen, but the term Memphis niggers is supposed to shock you. Obviously, it's a shocking word, but it's supposed to shock you. It's supposed to make you say, what the hell? And then you, from there, you listen to what the guy's saying, and that's what we got here. If it was the Memphis niggers, you could understand why people get upset. If somebody was pushing for the team, say it was the Memphis whatever Tornadoes, and they wanted to change the name to the Memphis Niggers, people would go berserk. They would just go berserk from coast to coast. But if you're going to pee on an Indian that way, it's okay. That's okay. You can do that to the Indian. There's no problem there. And so I'm reading in the USA Whore today. Florida State vows to keep Seminoles' nickname. Florida State supporters ratcheted up opposition Wednesday to the NCAA's controversial new restrictions on Native American nicknames and references. Determined to preserve Seminoles as a nickname and Chief Osceola as a mascot, Florida State's Board of Trustees authorized an appeal and positioned the school for legal challenge in the event it's denied. Representative Tom Feeney, Nazi from Florida, decrying what he called political correctness run amok, threatened to take the fight to Congress. Florida State might say if an institution has well-documented approval by the local Native American tribe or group. NCAA President Miles Brand defended its stand approved by the executive committee last week. I don't see them having second thoughts, he told the USA Today. One of the key objectives we have is to generate a conversation of some seriousness about these issues on the individual campuses. And we think in each case we have succeeded. But Brand pointed to the possibility of modifying the guidelines. FSU, he said, might want to consider proposing an amendment that narrowly addresses their issues. Florida State might say, if an institution has well-documented approval by the local Native American tribe or group, and that is the tribe or group that they will represent and not all Native Americans, then under the narrow conditions, I think the executive committee may decide they want to seriously reconsider such an amendment. So what they're saying here, if... they can get the Seminole tribe to, I think it works this way in Oklahoma, they have a tribal council, they have president of the tribe, this and that kind of thing. So if they can get the Seminole tribe in Florida to sign a document saying they don't mind, then they can continue to make fun and pee on the Indians. And now it looks to me like all they got to do is write a check. I don't know if the Indians in Florida are getting as rich as the Indians in Oklahoma. The Indians in Oklahoma are making mega billions. Well, I don't know about billions, but they're making a whole lot of money with this new casino in town. It's just crazy. I've told you before, you can't drive by the thing. It's just, if you go out there, have your good shoes on because you're going to do some walking. You can't park anywhere near the building. It is packed. It is crowded. Just try to get to these casinos in Oklahoma. Good luck to you. So, but if the Florida Indians are not making a lot of money, then they'll be cheap. You know, hey, what if we give you $250,000? Will you sign the document saying we can make fun of the Indians? And they'll say, well, sure, you know. But if they're making a lot of money, they may have to give them a couple of million. But isn't that crazy that then NCAA looks like they're trying to do the right thing here, but then they create this giant loophole. Well, of course, if you can get permission, you know, If you can get the Memphis NAACP to sign a paper saying they don't mind the Memphis niggers, then we'll let you call them the Memphis niggers. That, to me, is what we got here. You know, think about that. The whole idea about, you know, the tomahawk chop and all that, I mean, that, what's it got to do with football? It's got nothing to do with football, and it's got everything to do with tradition. Well, you know, they used to hang black people in Florida, too. Some traditions change, some things go away. And I don't see why they're going to continue to make fun of the Indians that way. Saw in the newspaper lately that the last code talker from World War II had died. Matter of fact, he died, I think, in a Tulsa nursing home. And recently we watched that miniseries, I think it was called Into the West, something like that. Steven Spielberg had something to do with it, and it was pretty good. But, you know, you can't watch a history of the United States and at all feel good about how things happened. It was an atrocity amount of. Do you know what I figured out, or maybe someone told me this? Do you know why there was a shortage of the buffalo? The white man killed the buffalo to starve the Indian out of existence. I did not know that. I'm 51 and I just learned that. Doesn't it make you wonder? You know, they said all the time you're growing up, they say, oh, there used to be herds of buffalo as big as Nebraska running around the Midwest. You know, for hundreds of years it was like that. And the Indians lived with the buffalo, lived off the buffalo, and used the, you know, they killed buffalo and eat the meat and keep the fur and the horns and the whatever. They, you know, they had a, they waste nothing, I think is what they call that. And then they called it over hunting, I think. And then, they would say the buffalo herds thinned out, and pretty soon the Indians were starving and thinking, well, you know, how stupid of them. Why did they kill all the buffalo? Why didn't they leave some around? You know, but no, I'm finding out here in my 50s that the white man murdered the buffalo by the thousands, by the millions, in an effort to starve the Indians out of existence. In a recent radio show, I mentioned that I wonder if we might have to ask Al-Qaeda for some terms. In other words, if we get out of the Middle East and promise to quit invading and stealing your oil, would you stop your attacks on the West? Now, to some that may sound like a surrender, but what I'm always saying about Israel is, hey, Israel, if you moved away from the millions of Arabs that want you dead, you wouldn't be blowing up all the time. Well, America can't move anywhere. There's no place America can move to, so that theory doesn't work. So we may have to talk terms. And why did I say that? Because after watching this Into the West thing, you know, I probably like you, when I grew up, there was always those crazy savage Indians. But then when you watch a dramatization of what really happened 150 years ago, you see the Indian sitting there minding his own business, living off his land that he's had forever, and here came Whitey to steal his land. And what was their reaction to that? In most instances, they took it. But some of the younger, more radical, let's fight back Indians, they would do these raiding parties, and when the, you know, these people come and steal your land, and to get back, you know, you might massacre a wagon train or something. Let the word go back east. Don't come out here. This is our land. You stay where you are. So if you look at the possibility that the Indians, I think probably pretty early up front, knew that they were going to lose this battle, but they didn't want to give up without a fight. I mean, guy knocks on your door and says, I want your house, get out. You're at a stoplight. Guy says, I want your car, get out. You know, you have a tendency to say, no, you can't have my car. The Indians didn't want to play it that way. They wanted to fight back. They often fought back with atrocities. But what are you going to do when a different race of people is coming to steal your land and kill you? Again, how nice are you supposed to fight back when your lives, when a genocide is happening? Are you supposed to play by the rules when you fight back? I just don't think the rules always apply. And it made me wonder about the code talkers. Surely the code talkers knew the history. Isn't it amazing that after the white man murdered the Indians almost out of existence, and even after we did that, the code talkers agreed to help Whitey win his war, and we lost the last one the other day. But, you know, when you watch the history of the United States, it's really, really damn ugly. Manifest destiny means we're going to kill every Indian we can find, and we're going to steal all the land we can. In that miniseries, Into the West, I was struck by the the language that they used about, we've got to fight these savages, we've got to get these crazy savages off our land, we can't let one of them live, we got to wipe them out. The only good Indian is a dead Indian. And they would go on and on. And, you know, in 2005, when you're sitting there watching this on television, you're thinking, well, this is their land. After we steal their land, it's essential that we murder every one of them. I just don't know. I mean, why are we doing that? But at the time, you know, they just thought, Indians, savages, less than human, no need to worry about, you know, Indians don't feel pain. Indians, if you kill an Indian's family, he doesn't mind. He's not human. So somewhere there is a parallel between what the white man did to the Indians 150 years ago and what the white man is doing to the Iraqis in 2005. And let me plant one more seed in your head. If it's true what we heard about Bush, if he called the Taliban and said, we want that pipeline, Unocal or whoever it is wants that pipeline, and we're going to do it one way or another, with or without you, you can have your carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs, we're coming to do it, what is your answer? And they said, screw you, we're not going to just give you our country because you demanded it, because you're bigger than we are. And Bush said, all right, then here we come. If Bush did that, then can't we understand why Osama did what he did? If Bush did that, now you can't take this out of context, if Bush did that, how outrageous was 9/11? Of course what happened 9/11 was outrageous, but if they only did that as a preemptive strike towards their certain doom, towards their loss of their country and probably their lives, if Bush guaranteed them, we will destroy you, you got to take a giggling murderer at his word. They saw what he did to the retarded black men in Texas. If they knew he was coming, then yeah, it puts 9/11 in a different light. Anyway, we got kind of sidetracked there with my little sidebar, but I don't think we should be making fun of the Indians when it comes to sports events. If you want to, the Seminoles can just change their name. By God, they can be the Florida State Beavers, you know, and just let everyone wear a big buck teeth to the game, and they can come up with the beaver chop if they want to. But you just don't need to make fun of the Indians just because it's a tradition that we make fun of the Indians. Remember, the whole reason we murdered the Indians was because, well, A, we wanted their land, but B, they're not humans anyway. They're just savages. There's no reason to bother with their feelings. An Indian doesn't own any land. He's an Indian. How can he own land? He's an Indian. He's a dumb red guy. There's just too much of that going on. I think we need to get off the, you know, what we did to the Indian, I guess, was worse than what we did to the black man, the apples and oranges. But if you like the Florida State Seminoles, you really ought to like the Memphis Niggers.
It's not my birthday. My birthday's in November. And yet, even when it's not on my birthday, today I received a gift, a beautiful gift. I wept with joy over receiving it. I'll tell you what happened. I'm watching CNN, typical back-and-forth conversation, liberal-conservative rigmarole. There you got your James Carville, your Robert Novak, talking about Catherine Harris's chances of being elected to the Senate.
Don't be too sure she's going to lose. All the establishment's against her. She might get elected. Let me finish what I'm going to say, James.
Wow.
Please. I know you hate to hear me, but you have to.
He's got to show these right wingers that he's got backbone.
Okay. Seemed like your typical zero-sum game of CNN discourse. In fact, I recognize those two guys from a show they used to work on, but I can't remember the name of it. But so there's nothing really unusual about this conversation at all until this.
He's got to show these right wingers that he's got backbone. You know, I've tried to walk through your letter of tour pages watching you, show them you're tough.
Well, I think that's bullshit, and I hate that. Just let it go.
James, what do you think, though, seriously, about this Senate race, James, that basically the...
Now there's a leak someone's going to be held accountable for. No! It's my birthday. It's my birthday.
hot down in Florida that Jeb Bush was rigging ice machines.
It was announced this week that Saddam Hussein's trial is going to be televised, and the Iraqis are not happy about it because it's going to preempt one of their favorite shows, the Kill the Jews Hour, which I know what y'all thinking. He don't want to be on TV long.
And this draft dodger stuff, I bring it up because it is relevant. It's relevant because if George Bush had gone overseas, like so many brave young Americans do, he would have come to understand what all of them understand, which is that people who are not like us are really not like us, okay? Every time Bush talks about the hate is for our freedom, I just want to slap him in his two-dimensional mind, okay? The hate is for our freedom. The hate is for our freedom. You gotta get a fucking parrot. They hate us for our freedom! They hate us for our freedom!
You tell them, Fluffy.
They hate us for our freedom!
That's right.
Actually, there's a very simple explanation for why already insanely rich oil companies get money from the government. It's called the oil cycle. We begin with the American family, a hardworking people who've developed a taste for powerful engines and stretch televisions. Through a natural process known as taxation, the income of these families is broken down and reabsorbed back into a system we call the government. The government swallows these funds and converts them into what are called subsidies, some of which go to giant profitable oil companies. That found money can then be used to look for new sources of oil, and to use the public's need for this oil to rape them for profits.
Martha Stewart, Martha Stewart was in prison for 11, 12 years. She's finally getting her electronic ankle bracelet removed in 2 weeks, I believe. They're taking off the electronic ankle bracelet in 2 weeks. And thank God, I'm so happy about that, because the damn thing would always leave a big red mark on the back of my neck.
Get your mind off the war. That's all it is. It's a trick to get your mind off the war. Okay? I think Bush sent that girl to Kobe's room. Bush sent that girl to Kobe's room. Bush sent that little boy to Michael Jackson's house. Bush killed Lacey Peterson. Bush was fucking Paris Hilton in that video. All to get your mind off the war. Bush lied to me. They all lied to me. They're like, we gotta go to Iraq, because they're the most dangerous country on earth. They're the most dangerous regime in the world. If they're so dangerous, how come it only took 2 weeks to take over the whole country? Man, you couldn't take over Baltimore in 2 weeks. Trying to scare us to go. Everybody's trying to scare us. Tell us to be on the lookout for Al Qaeda. Like, where? I ain't scared of Al Qaeda. I'm from Brooklyn. I don't give a fuck about Al Qaeda, okay? Shit. Did Al Qaeda blow up the building in Oklahoma? No. Did Al Qaeda put anthrax in your mail? No. Did Al Qaeda drag James Byrd down the street till his eyeballs popped out of his fucking head? No. I ain't scared of Al-Qaeda. I'm scared of Al-Cracker.
The Cindy Sheehan saga has many in the right fuming over her decision to go so public with her anguish.
I do think that she has turned her private, personal pain into a public circus. She is also a person who's had a political agenda for a lot longer than her son has been dead.
She's a crackpot.
Yeah, she's a crackpot. I mean, who in their right mind raises an altar boy Eagle Scout honor student Marine?
Had to be Paulie told Johnny.
You think so?
Who was there when I told the Ginny sack joke?
Paulie. I remember Albert saying he didn't get a gift.
It was little Paulie, the witless fucking nephew. He told Paulie. Paulie tells Johnny. Fucking telephone game like high school girls. Want to play phone games? Hello, Verona, Green Grove Retirement Home, something. Just connect me.
Fuck you doing?
Yeah, hello? I'd like to talk to a Mrs. Galtieri. She's a resident there.
One moment, please. Hello?
Mrs. Marianucci Galtieri?
Yes. Hi, this is Detective Mike Hunt, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania Police Department. You have a son, Peter Paul?
Oh, my God, what happened?
He's all right, ma'am, but I'm afraid he's in a little trouble.
We found him in a public men's room in Lafayette Park.
I don't know how to put this delicately.
He was sucking a Cub Scout's dick.
What? No, it's a mistake.
Ma'am, I wish that was all. But I'm afraid we had to have emergency surgery performed upon arrival at headquarters after discovery of a small rodent in the rectal passage.
Oh, my God.
A gerbil, ma'am. The county does not cover medical procedures deemed caused by criminal sexual activity. Section 4, paragraph 15. We'll need an insurance number.
Oh, my God. I have Blue Cross Blue Shield. Is that all right?
Ma'am, could you hold on for 1 second? I have the hospital on the other line.
The president has yet to sit down with Ms. Sheehan during the first 2 weeks of his 5-week vacation, but he did take the rare trouble of standing on the set of Bonanza to talk about her with others.
She feels strongly about her position, and she has every right in the world to say what she believes. This is America. She has a right to her position.
As long as that position is a mile away from the barbecue pit. I'm gonna have ribs tonight. I like them big and juicy.
Asked again about Sheehan Saturday, Bush told reporters, quote, "I think it's important for me to be thoughtful and sensitive to those who have got something to say, but I think it's also important for me to go on with my life." Yes, I've got to be strong. It's time for me to put this woman's dead son behind me and just move on. The president's moving on strategy for Saturday included a 2-hour bike ride, an evening Little League Baseball playoff game, lunch with Condoleezza Rice, a nap, some fishing, and some reading. How did reading sneak in there?
How about the judgment on 9/11? To keep reading to school children when you are told the country is under attack. I mean, talk about being nonpartisan. How much of a partisan pretzel do you have to twist yourself into to work backwards to, yes, when a president is told that the country is under attack, the proper thing to do is to freeze, to choke, to sit there like Forrest Gump. Really. That takes a lot of working backwards to that. Because, you know, it's not like we live in the nuclear age. Oh, wait, we do live in the nuclear age. In fact, Bush and his buddy Mr. Blair sold this war partly by telling us that Saddam Hussein could reach us with his nuclear weapons, which he didn't have, in 45 minutes. 45 minutes! But 7 to sit there while your piss dries, that's okay.
What's the biggest issue in America right now? The most divisive issue in America right now
is affirmative action. Now, a lot of people think affirmative action got a lot to do with the 60s and the back of the bus and separate lunch counters. No, 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 no. When you see footage of the 60s and see black people, see us getting sprayed down and hosed down and dogs getting sicked on us and little girls getting burnt up in churches, that's just white people being nice. Nicer than they was in the 50s, 40s, and 30s. No, no, no. Affirmative action was put into place to offset policies that the United States government implemented during slavery that affect us today. Now, when I talk about slavery, When I talk about slavery, I'm just talking about a period of time where black people had no rights. So you're talking about the 1600s to about 1964. Now, people go, well, what happened during slavery that could affect us today? What happened during slavery that could affect us today? A lot of shit happened during slavery that affects us every day. For instance, during slavery, they used to take the biggest, strongest slaves and breed them and try their best to make big, strong super slaves, okay? They bred the slaves, and this is why black people dominate every physical activity in the United States of America, okay? We're only 10% of the population, we're 90% of the final four, okay? We fucking dominate all this shit, okay? Basketball, baseball, football, boxing, track, even golf and tennis. As soon as they make a heated hockey rink, we're gonna take that shit to them. Wayne Gretzky. Wait till you see LeBron on some skates. You ain't seen shit yet. He just gonna have one skate chilling. What's up? He ain't even gonna have a stick. He gonna smack the puck with his dick. How? Slap shot, bitch!
You are listening to Bart Cop Radio at BartCop.com. The Hammer of Truth.
Well, there you had it. Show number 80, Bart Cop Radio. I hope you found something that you liked. And if you didn't find anything that you like, I blame you. Why? Because I'm liberal. I always have an excuse. But no, if I don't get any feedback, I can't get any better. You know, if I get an email that says, hey, I liked when you did that one sports story, well, that next issue is liable to be all sports. So if there's something you like, there's something you don't like, if you'd let me know. I hate to be hammering away on something because I think people like it and everybody hates it and no one bothered to tell me. Oh, wait, I forgot who I was dealing with. No, you guys don't mind getting off your chest. Something on your mind. But hey, I'm going to do a shot of Chinako. I might even smoke one. Going to start putting show number 81 together. Going to try to make show 81 better than 80. Boy, by the time we get to 100, maybe we'll be smoking. Maybe we'll be good. Thanks to all the subscribers. Thanks to the people who dropped the occasional check in the mail. As you know, that does not belong to Caesar. So those mean a lot. Thanks to Tommy and Tally. Thanks to everyone who contributed. Thanks to Jim in Chicago, who's fixed me up with some of those good Bush parodies. We'll see you again in show 81. This is Bart and K-Drag. I am out of here.
Once upon a time at the foot of a great mountain, there was a town where the people known as Happy Folk lived. Their very existence a mystery to the rest of the world, obscured as it was by great clouds. Here they played out their peaceful lives, innocent of the litany of excess and violence that was growing in the world below. To live in harmony with the spirit of the mountain called Monkey was enough. Then one day, strange folk arrived in the town. They came in camouflage, hidden behind dark glasses, but no one noticed them. They only saw shadows. You see, without the truth of the eyes, the happy folk were blind.
And hiding out in holes, waiting for the sunset to come, people going home. Jump out from behind them and shoot them in the head. Now everybody's dancing, the dance of the dead, the dance of the dead, the dance of the dead.
into the higher reaches of the mountain, and it was there that they found the caves of unimaginable sincerity and beauty. By chance, they stumbled upon the place where all good souls come to rest. The strange folk, they coveted the jewels in these caves above all things, and soon they began to mine the mountain, its rich scene fueling the chaos of their own world. Meanwhile, down in the town, the happy folks slept restlessly, their dreams invaded by shadowy figures digging away at their souls. Every day, people would wake and stare at the mountain. Why was it bringing darkness into their lives? And as the strange folk climbed deeper and deeper into the mountain, holes began to appear, bringing with them a cold and bitter wind that chilled the very soul of the monkey. For the first time, the happy folk felt fearful, for they knew that soon the monkey would stir from its deep sleep. Then there came a sound, distant first, that grew into cacophony, so immense that it could be heard far away in space. There were no screams. There was no time. The mountain called Monkey had spoken. There was only fire. And then, nothing.
Oh, little town, USA, time's going to see.